Hello, fellow adventurers. I'm Erica, and welcome to the Adventure On podcast, a place where we share stories of self-discovery and lessons learned both on and off the trail. Welcome back, everyone. Today, I have my friend Lindsay with me, and I'm super excited for her to share a little bit about her story and her journey on the trail. So welcome, Lindsay.
Hey, how are you?
Oh, so excited that you're here. So tell me a little bit about yourself.
So I guess I have a pretty convoluted story, and I've moved over a dozen times in the 30 years of my life. I grew up in upstate New York, so I spent a lot of time outside, but just like hanging out, playing in the backyard. There wasn't really a whole lot of like camping, hiking, that kind of stuff going on, but I liked being outside. That was something I always knew. I moved to Virginia after a series of college changes and just not being able to figure it out, and I met a Navy guy, and I thought that was my way out. And so I went to Virginia with him for a change of pace when I was like 21. And I was in Norfolk, Virginia. And that's, if for anyone who's been there, is like, it's a big city, relatively speaking. I know it's not New York City or anything, but it's busy. There's, you know, it's tons of traffic. There's not really anywhere to kind of get your own space. And so when I eventually got out of that relationship, I went back to school, joined the military myself. And while I was on a tour up in Dover, Delaware, it got me kind of back into the country and feeling that little bit of freedom. And to just backtrack a little bit, probably the year prior to that, when I was in boot camp, I found out that one of my friends had committed suicide. So that hit me pretty hard. And I was kind of trying to find my center, navigating school, you know, the Air Force Reserve, all of that. But once I got that detail and I had weekends off, it was just close enough that I could go back to New York and do some hiking. And I found that just being outside was, you know, a huge release for me. I was able to kind of cope with that loss and trying to work my way through it. And just from there, I became obsessed. It was kind of like a drug for me. So from there, I got into like rock climbing, kayaking, trying camping, all kinds of different stuff just from meeting people. So I know, you know, that always stuck with me, but I do when I'm not moving. I have a puzzle sitting on the desk right now. I've always got some sort of puzzle going. I just bought some stuff at IKEA to build some furniture. It's like adult Legos, right?
Oh my gosh. I've never heard it described like that. It's totally adult Legos. Oh my goodness.
It's been a really exciting day. Last night I was up until I think like 2 o'clock in the morning working on the one. I got distracted a little bit. So I was watching Brooklyn Nine-Nine too, which is another thing I like doing. But yeah, so, you know, I like doing that kind of stuff, tinkering around, scrapbooking, any kinds of arts and crafts, which is, you know, also another therapy method for dealing with like anxiety and depression and stuff like that. I just really like to keep my mind going, but I am, like, you guys have inspired me watching all of your guys's posts along the way of getting out west. And I do want to try mountain biking this year. That's my goal. And then archery is another thing that I'm sure you guys have something up your sleeve somewhere and have done somewhere, but
I used to take my clients to do archery. I worked at a residential treatment center for many years, and one of the things I would take them to do was archery. I never would have thought to try it. It is so much fun.
I knew it. I was like, I didn't see on their page, but I bet they've been. I did it in high school, and that was like one of my fondest memories. I got picked on a lot in school and stuff, so I really hated high school, but I remembered like in the, you know, the last couple of years when we were like quote unquote old enough that I got to do archery, and that was just something I always really looked forward to. I've done it a handful of times since, just tinkering around with some of my friends' bows, like back home and, you know, visiting people in the country where you can just go out in the backyard. I did get one of those like super strong hunting arrows stuck in my friend's barn on Halloween weekend one time.
Oh my goodness.
So I was dumb and stupid and young. I was like 21 and drunk, and I was like, oh, let me fire off this bow. It was a bad idea. It got taken away, obviously, but it was real fun at the time and nobody died. So that was cool.
It's a good story to tell.
So that is a fun story, because I was Jennifer Beals from Flashdance. So just picture like the what's it called? The leg warmers and like a a bodysuit and then just kind of like out there like some sort of like Artemis, right? This just flash dance Artemis, just like shooting these bows, but with no natural direction. I was like 10 feet off the target and they were like, okay, that's, we're done here. So
yeah.
I sent my sister a picture. I'm like, well, what am I doing? And she's like, who let you have that? And I was like, yeah, I guess that's, and then it got taken away. So I guess that was a good point. So, but yeah, it just, it's fun. I've always had this interest in it. And I think being in Kansas now, because I did move from Virginia and moved around the East Coast a little bit and then found my way here, that obviously, you know, the high peaks and stuff are not, I'm 19 hours closer and 7 hours away from the Rockies than I was when I was living on the East Coast. So that's a bonus, but that's still, you know, obviously not a day trip. So I think something like archery would be really cool to get into. And the mountain bike scene out here, Kansas, Missouri, surprisingly pretty big that you get a lot of people.
Really?
There's a pretty decent amount of like trail systems, but you don't see a lot of people out very often. So I'm trying to kind of get into some trail maintenance and being able to maybe have an app to navigate those would be cool for out here because you don't have that emphasis on the outdoors. It's pretty barren. If you know, probably ask anyone what they think about Kansas and they'll be like, oh, it's flat and there's cornfields. So being able to promote that a little bit more to say, hey, there's, you know, stuff going on here, but it's nice that it is quieter, a little bit slower, a good change of pace for me, for sure, for me to kind of decompress for a little bit. But yeah, so that's my long and short of it.
Okay, so many questions. So I'm also from the upstate New York area. Where in upstate New York did you grow up?
So I grew up in just like in the very base of the Adirondack Park in a town called Mayfield, which I graduated with like 70 kids. So that's very, very middle of nowhere. We had a handful of farms. A lot of my friends that I did have, like I was friends with even in the entire county, a lot of them had farms, whether it was dairy farms or their own private, like just for themselves, couple cows and pigs and whatever, but definitely a very rural area. And I was about, so like for frame of reference, about 45 minutes northwest of Albany, which is the state capital for people who don't know. But I'm about 2 hours from the Catskill Mountains, about 2.5-3 hours to the High Peak region in the Adirondacks. I went to school, my first college was Plattsburgh State University in the SUNY system. And that was, you know, 20 minutes south of Canada. So everyone, all of my friends from the South, I'll joke and say that I'm from Canada. So pretty neat. But yeah, we were, you know, 2 hours to Vermont. So my options were pretty open. It was nice because within 3 to 5 hours of Niagara Falls, Boston, Philadelphia, Cape Cod, you know, Burlington, all of those big cities in the Northeast that everyone talks about were weekend trips for me. So that was nice that I did get to hit all of those when I was like in my late teens, early 20s. I did, you know, I had a boyfriend that I would go off on the weekends and go check those places out because he was from Florida and it was all about going to the cities. We were definitely polar opposites, but I saw a lot and that experience was really great. So
I imagine it had to be such a huge culture shock going from a rural place like upstate New York, where you have very open landscape, to what you described as like a pretty busy city, Norfolk.
You know, I got there and I was like, oh no, I was like, what did I do? But you know, I had moved there for my boyfriend. I was not in a good spot financially. I wasn't doing, didn't know what I was doing. And so I was like, all right, cool. Let me just do this, right? Like, let me just, you know, I was 21 and ladies, well, and gentlemen, nobody move for anyone. It doesn't matter. Don't let anyone promise you. Don't give up your life and what you're doing because someone promises you the world, because that's not always a guarantee. Unless I guess you've been together for like 100 years and that's fine. But
well, maybe don't move across the country for your boyfriend when you're 21, or do, and it could be a really interesting opportunity to grow and change. Because I'm sure moving there like changed your life.
Yeah, I think it's definitely brought me where I am today. So there is that, but there was like 4 months, it was literally 4 months later. It was just, I found out that the guy who was taking me to the beach and to the shooting range, and when I moved in, came to be the guy that, you know, worked 12-hour days and then drove home and sat in his room and played video games and expected me to make him dinner every night. And so it was the expectation of like, you know, I'm the woman in the house and I'm not making the income. He's working all day. And so the hot meal should be on the table, kind of that sort of very traditional style relationship in a not traditional life. And not in my lifestyle. I've never been the stay at home, barefoot in the kitchen kind of person. And so for him to expect that was pretty wild.
Well, and at some point during this experience, you decided yourself to join services.
Yeah. So that was always something in the back of my mind. I have a pretty crazy, like I said, you know, my story is pretty intense. Like my parents, well, my mom is a very strong willed woman and she has done very well for herself. She's definitely I'm not her, I guess is the best way to say that. She loves me. She means the best. But growing up, like it was very hard for me to be myself. Like I was just in this box. I got good grades. So that was always expected of me. So there was no reason for me to come home with a C, right? Like I was an A student. I volunteered all of the time, which probably makes sense when you see a lot of my posts are always doing like donations and giveaways and stuff, that I've always been somebody who likes community and contributing. And that was another thing. I enjoyed doing it, but then it became an expectation. And so I was this smart prodigy kid that, you know, I was one of those like gifted kids. I was testing and reading well above my age level and all of that. And so I actually got accepted to Plattsburgh. I didn't even fill out the essay or anything. They just sent me a letter in the mail and was like, we'll take you full ride scholarship.
Oh, wow.
And because I did the college classes while I was in high school. So that's what kind of level I was on then. But one of my sister's good friends joined the Marine Corps. She was a couple years ahead of me. And so when she came back, she had her hair all cut short and she looked all tough. And I always looked up to her. And so I was like, oh man, I want to join the Marine Corps. And so when I was kind of bumping that idea around, and then I went to like an RPI game, and the Marine Corps recruiters were there, and I was there with a couple of my guy friends, and they were all talking shit. So they were all like running their mouths, and I had on, so let's paint this picture. I had the UGG boots, the denim skirt. Remember, this is like 2005, 2006, right? So, the long sleeve V-neck shirt, and it's December. And so they were all talking and they had the pull-ups to see who could do the most. And I did like four or five, which isn't fantastic, but pretty good for a cross-country.
I don't think I can do four or five pull-ups now.
And those guys couldn't either. So I beat them. And so I had this t-shirt. I had it for like, I just saw it in my move, but I think I ended up donating it. And it was a Marine Corps one. Pain is weakness, leaving the body was on the back. And they were like, oh, you should join. So I was all hyped up. And then, you know, then it was the conversation of, I got the full ride. You know, I was wasting my potential if I went into the military. You know, we were still back in that mentality that I was going to be a waste because I could probably cure cancer. Well, here I am not doing anything. So, I ended up supporting a lot of people who I met, a bunch of sailors, which is how I met my boyfriend. I met them because there's a station up by where I live or where I lived then in Saratoga. And so I just started just looking out for them, knowing that they didn't have family in the area. So during the holidays, I would like make Thanksgiving dinners, make pies for Christmas, stuff like that, and try to like take care of them, you know, while they're doing what they're doing for us. And so I finally, when I came down, I was in school and I was working at a bar, and one of my customers was a very decorated Air Force ranking officer. I can't remember what it is now. I didn't know what it was back then. But he came in, like he would always say, oh, try the reserves. You should go to the Air Force. You'd make a good officer, blah, blah. And I'm like, well, I'm in school still, so I can't do that. And then finally he came in and it was like stacks on stacks ribbons. And I was like, holy crap. And he was like, did you talk to a recruiter yet? And I was like, all right, I'm going to do it. He's like, just check it out. Just talk to him. And everything looked good. They were going to help pay for the rest of my school. And so I was like, okay, cool. So let's do this. And it was like, A, you know, I wish I could give that back because I'm always out here supporting them, but also to be alongside them would be cool. And then when he started talking about the officer thing, I was like, I should definitely do an enlisted route because it definitely gives you get a little bit more respect putting myself in their shoes. So if I do end up going to the officer side, then at least I have I've been there, I've deployed, I've trained, I've possibly switched career fields, that when you become an officer and now you're looking at policies and you're dealing with an airman who may be troubled, have mental health issues, just be struggling in general, just going through a little blip in, you know, dealing with a divorce or a death in the family, mm-hmm. something. And then, you know, you see some performance issues coming up, someone's coming in late or not doing as well or failed a test. So you can be like, hey, what's going on? Because I know for me to get on that other side, then I can say, okay, I was there. Or I know we struggled with this type of training because we weren't getting funding or we didn't have enough time to do it. That when I become the decision maker, I can say, oh yeah, I remember that. Or, I don't remember what that was like, but let me go talk to the E5 or the SNCO, senior non-commissioned officer, who's like an, you know, an E8 usually is, you know, kind of running the team for a mission. And, oh, let me talk to them and see like, how's your team going? What do you need? Is anyone, you know, having any issues? And kind of be able to be more conscious of my decisions on behalf of the people who are going to have to deal with it. And so that was really what kind of inspired me to do that. And then of course the healthcare and the education benefits were for sure the big pluses to that, because we were right then was in the middle of like the whole healthcare crisis and people not being able to have access. And I didn't have a full-time job. So that was something that was pretty important to me. So that's kind of how I ended up in that. And it's definitely a plus and minus. You deal with the things like I've dealt with, you know, losing friends to their own battles, losing people in actual battle, you know, luckily I've been in peacetime, but it does take a little bit more mentally, which is why, you know, being outdoors and having that outlet is so important to me, because things do get stressful and you do get, you know, high demands and time constraints and all that. So when you're in go time, like when you have that time off, having something to do to kind of get away from that, that kind of gives you that morale boost is definitely important, which is why I always promote that, like, oh, check your mental health. Cause I know it can put you out of a fight so fast for no reason.
And your friend that took their life, were they a member of armed services?
Yeah. So Chris was one of my friends growing up. He lived like two houses down, and his little sister and I were actually really good friends, and well, with both of them, but you know, he had some issues like growing up. He had a little bit of some anger stuff. Like you could tell he was like easily agitated. He was just growing up, like being a kid in a new school, you know, all that. So growing up and getting to know him and stuff, things ended up seeming like he was doing okay. He was doing really well. And he met this girl. He ended up going into the army and doing a full contract. I don't know if it was 4 or 6 years, but then he went to be an EMT and he was in the reserve. So you kind of have that double too, because he was doing the first responder stuff while he was a medic. And I don't know really what the trigger was. And that was kind of something that really, you know, where mental health and checking on your friends and that became so important to me, because when I moved away, I went to college, like we went on our separate ways. I ended up down in Virginia. He was still in New York. That all of that time, we really just like connected on Snapchat. Like we would just text through that, send silly photos, pictures of the beach or the mountain, like wherever we were, like on our vacations. And so I didn't really get to see him in person. And the year before that, I was supposed to see him, but things just got a little bit crazy in our schedules and I missed him. But I remember like I got on the plane, and like I said, everything seemed good. Like it was just days before that, him and his girlfriend were going back and forth on Facebook, like posting pictures of like the perfect country home. And it was just so soothing. And I was like, you know, it's good to see him in a better place. Like that's literally, that was like what was going on in my head. And I was like, oh, this is great. And then I got on the plane a couple of days later and we were texting back and forth. And I was like, okay, well, you know, plane's about to land. And so that was in, not at Lackland, but at the airport where they were going to bus us in. And so I knew that was like kind of go time from there. Like then I was boot camp mode. And so I was like, all right, love you. You know, talk to you on the other, you know, see you on the other side. That's what he said to me. He said, make them proud. And, you know, break a leg or whatever. And he said, I know you'll make a good troop. And then he said, I'll see you on the other side, which is like, it's like such a bone chilling, like, I don't know what he meant by that, but like when I hear that phrase, I have tingles right now, because I just remember, like, that was literally the last thing that I read from him. And I actually shut my phone off and that was fine. I went to boot camp, and then it was literally just a couple of days later that he did. And I found out the day before my birthday, on my boot camp graduation, my mom was very nonchalant, was like, oh, by the way. And I was like, huh? You know, we're like having dinner. And so I'm just like in shock, you know, this is a big day. I just went through getting my ass kicked for 6 weeks of being in training, no connection with the outside world. Got to talk to someone in my family twice for like 15 minutes. I think it was like my mom the first time and then my grandma the second time, but like, I didn't know what was going on. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that kind of stuff is exactly why they do what they do. And they cut you off from all of that so that you can focus on your training. But like, it was a couple of days later, we were doing a suicide prevention training. It was literally like a room full of airmen. I'll never forget it. And they start talking about, you know, I'm sure there's people in here who have experienced this, whatever. So like the sensitivity of everything. And I'm like, okay, cool. Like, this is where we're going. And I'm just trying to like do like breathing mechanisms. Like, I'm just trying to like bring it to base level. And then they just start talking and I just like lost it. Like, I just could, like, my body was shaking. I was trying so hard not to cry. And I ended up getting up and I like got up out of the auditorium. Like, it was super hot. Like, I was feeling really hot. So I took my blouse off. So I was just in my t-shirt and I got up and I walked out and I walked out of the building. So I'm standing outside on this just cement pad in a t-shirt. I don't have my cover on, nothing. Like, I'm just out there in like boots and utes, as they say, which is like not a thing you do if you're not actively working and have authorized that, right? Mm. And I just collapsed. Like, I just went to the ground. I'm just like crying. Like, I can't even breathe. And like, these drill sergeants are coming over to like scream at me. And I'm just like, I don't even hear, I don't know what's going on. Like, I just, it's almost like when you see in the movies where there's like that, that there was like piercing sound, like a post blast, like that ring. Mm-hmm. And like, that was it. And I was just like, I didn't even, one of my wingmen come out and cause they made her come be with me. We had a whole wingman concept. You always had to have two people of the same sex. And so you couldn't be by yourself. And so I was probably getting yelled at for that, not having my blouse on, not having my cover on, like, whatever. I'm getting like screamed at. And then once like they realized like what was going on, they were like everyone stopped and I had to like go over to like the hospital and they were just like, what is going on? And I was just like, this is where I'm at. And so they were, luckily they were obviously there was a reason to kind of give me a little bit of a break there.
Yeah.
Sure. So we handled that. And then I just went into my tech school and I had a couple of breakdowns there. And it was hard to deal with, just kind of like sitting there and just like festering in that, like, I should have seen it, or what, like, I should have been there more. You know, mm-hmm. you go through all these feelings of like regret and remorse and just like that you could have done better. And you kind of feel like crap because like, that's your friend and you should have been there. And so that was a very surreal experience. And that's why like my platform is that military mental health and the suicide awareness, mm-hmm. because that was, I mean, getting outdoors and bringing the awareness in is what makes me stronger today, being able to cope with that. Like, I feel like, obviously it doesn't cancel it out. It doesn't take the fact away that he's gone or any of that, but it makes me feel better that if I can prevent it from happening to someone else, that I'm doing my part in making sure that like, I'm not doing it because I feel guilty. It's not because I'm trying to like make myself look like a better person. It's just because of the understanding of it. And also knowing that there's other people out there who are experiencing this, that mm-hmm. I mean, I've had a handful of people come back on my social media and say, hey, like, thanks for being so transparent on this. Like, cause I never felt comfortable talking about it. And, you know, and they'll, you know, we'll have conversations. And so I've built a pretty big connection with a couple of people that are on my following from it. And mm-hmm. so I'm very thankful for that, because they say it's 22 veterans a day. It's getting higher in active duty. And possibly, you know, that 22 is still, that's been a number that we've been hugging onto for like 5-10 years now. So that could be higher. Mm-hmm. It's hard to tell, especially with like COVID and stuff, all of the overdoses and whether or not a drug related is necessarily a suicide. So there's a lot of like cluttering data, right? So, but one is too many. That's one of our slogans, is till it's zero. It's doesn't matter what the number is that right. One person matters just as much as all 22 together. That it's something that that's always probably going to be my platform, you know, primarily and foremost, just because it is. And now me being in it, right, is I'm more exposed to the likelihood of that happening again, unfortunately. So, but I'm proud of what I do, and I'm glad that I can at least step up and help, hopefully inspire more people to get help when they need it. So.
Yeah. And I love what you mentioned, you touched on a couple times, was this transparency and this need. We need to talk about this. And it's almost like you have to, when you're in those high stress, traumatic situations, you have to turn your emotions off because that's the only way you're going to survive the situation. And talking about suicide awareness, talking about mental health, is so important because we need to flip that narrative and have it be more of it may not have always been safe to feel emotions or talk about mental health or whatever, fill in the blank. And it is safe now, right? Like, we're creating a space now where this is okay. And the more we talk about it, the more we can help each other. And the more we help each other, the more we'll see those numbers drop.
And that's like the crazy thing about it, right? Is, I mean, even in a civilian job, you hear the term leave it at the door, right? So I understand, like, if you're going into battle, you probably don't need to be discussing your divorce when like the offensive is shooting literally at you. Like,
right.
You can put that aside and get your shit done. But the thing that where the big miss is that like when they come back, I mean, you come back from a deployment and they give you the opportunity. Like, I had to do a behavioral health survey, and granted, for me, I had an episode because I kept shoving shit down and I was dealing with some issues with, I kind of got screwed going out the door with my orders, and then I kind of felt like I was getting bullied in my work center, and of course dealing with being a female in a male dominated field, you know, there's a lot of things that can go on there, and just stuff going on back home. My sister ended up like in the emergency room. She went to Mexico and she got proposed to. She's like, oh my God, check this out. She sent me a message. And then like the next day, my mom's like, oh, your sister's in the hospital. She's having organ failure and they're testing her for HIV. And I'm like,
oh my gosh.
Right. So I'm like dealing with all this. She ended up being fine. It was this rare parasite that she got and while she was in Mexico. Don't drink the water, but also don't get drinks with ice in them if you're not at like a safe resort. So that's the thing that we learned. But so she was fine, but you know, when you're away and she graduated, she became a nurse practitioner. I think your master's, right? So she graduated from that. You know, there's all this stuff that I was missing. And one of the things that's like super crucial, and for anyone who's listening, that one of the big things that I hear a lot about not getting invited to things or not being able to attend things is like, oh, because you're in the military, right? So I get it. Like, my job is demanding. I have to be certain places. I can't just drop everything and show up somewhere, you know, without approval. But like, be like, how are you doing? I'll tell you, I'm having a great time, or I'm not doing so well. And instead of just being like, oh, you couldn't be there, you know, oh, because of the military, that like, I knew, and it was, that put a lot of pressure on me, just being out there knowing I was missing these things and then having it kind of like thrown in your face in a way that I was dealing with some of that. And my family is not, you know, my grandfather and my grandmother on separate sides were both Army. Well, my grandmother was in the WAC, so she was one of the nurses in the Women's Army Corps. And, you know, so this is, I think that was World War II for her. And my grandfather was Vietnam. He didn't talk about it. I didn't know that he was in until after, like literally a couple years ago when I was going to Germany. And my grandma was like, oh, that was your grandfather's favorite base. And I was like, wait, grandpa was in the, what? So we didn't talk about it, right? We don't talk mental health. We don't talk military. So it's been interesting. And so I had like a little, you know, and I was stressed out. I just finished school. I was supposed to be working on my GRE. Like, I had to take the GREs to get into grad school, which I obviously didn't do. But I, you know, there was a lot going on. And this was when Iran, like, literally had their missiles, you know, pointed at us, and we shot one of the drones down. And there was like the whole thing about we were going to go to war, right? And so I'm sitting over here. I can't say anything because I knew a lot of stuff that I wasn't, that back then the rest of the world didn't know. Right. So we knew, you know, we knew where their missiles were. We knew they were pointing at us. We knew the Patriot teams were being deployed overnight and that they didn't have enough food, or like, you know, they were undersupplied and overworked, undermanned, all of that. And I knew all of that stuff. I had the logistics on that, but there were people, most of my base didn't even know that. So I'm carrying all this weight, and I just, they got in and we kind of de-escalated the whole Iran thing, avoided, made peace for, you know, they were doing talks and whatever. And so I did. And then I just had a second to just stop. Ramadan had just passed. We had a big movement coming out. We sent an entire air wing back, and I was kind of spearheading that movement. And so when all that stuff stopped, and then we were just sitting around, and then they were starting to make me do these random odd jobs. It was like 120 degrees out. I don't do well in the heat. So let's start there. Yeah. And I just broke. And luckily I had a team of people behind me. Like the, not my team, but the leadership that was there at the base. So people that I met on the base that I became friends with, everyone had good things to say about me. I was doing volunteering and like getting a bunch of like care packages and stuff sent over for the army people that came in, all the soldiers that came in, and like morale was super low. And so I was still like pouring my heart and soul into getting donations and stuff out there. And they were, you know, they allowed me to go to therapy because they had psychologists at another base. They brought a team back to our base because I was fighting for that too. They were like trying to cut down staffing on our base because they wanted to shut it down, but we weren't going anywhere. One of the forces, one of the Marine Corps forces was there, and they were like, yeah, we're not leaving. And we're like, well, we make your dinners. And they were like, well, you're staying too. And we're like, all right, cool. that's basically how that conversation went. Right. So, but they did take our psychologists, and the Marines and then the Navy, the docs that were with them and the Army didn't have their own. So they were using ours, and we pulled them out away from them too. And so I actually stood up. I had a coin, but I lost it. My command got mad at me, but the command chief for our, that area of responsibility coined me for stepping up because they asked about questions. And I was like, hey, so our psychologist team was taken away, our mental health team was sent home. And so what happens when you have a potential suicide or whatever? And this was before I even had my break. Like I wasn't even in this, like it wasn't even about me at this point. And I was like, so what happens? Like what happens if one of my wingmen like has a mental break and they're saying they're suicidal or they're attempting and we don't have anyone here? And the psychologist team is an hour and 15 minutes away at Ali Aslim. And they were like, yeah, so that's a good point. You know, I was like, are we going to have some sort of liaison thing? Like, can we have volunteers? Like, I'll volunteer, put my number out there. So if anyone's feeling like they need someone to sit up all night, like I could be that person. You know, we should probably have one for each of the tiers for juniors, NCOs, and SNCOs, because what E2 is going to go to an E9 and be like, help me, you know. And I was trying to run all this stuff by them. And then like, they were like, oh, well, you know, we'll chat after the luncheon thing that we were doing. Does anyone else have any other questions? Like no one said anything. And so we finished up the lunch and the command chief came over and he said he was also reserve and he is a mental health professional in some capacity. And he was like, I really appreciate you. Like, it sounds like you believe in the wingman concept. Like this is something that's really important to you. And then I was like, yeah, sir. And I, you know, told him about my friend and he coined me and he was like, we're going to have some conversations. He had me shoot him an email. That's what I got in trouble for. I was supposed to CC my command. So my command looked like they knew about it so they could look good for it. So that's what that was supposed to be about. Right. But, you know, so I got talked to and I was like, y'all are going to sit here and yell at me for not doing whatever. But all I hear in my head is that we're getting a mental health team back here and I won. I'm like, yeah. So I can be in trouble. I'll work an extra day every week or stay late every day, whatever I've got to do, I'll take it because I made an impact. Like I did what, you know, that was important to me. And luckily they weren't back in place yet when I had my, it was like a, probably like 2-3 weeks later. But by that next week, they had people in there full time. So I was going twice a week doing the, like, they call them battlefield acupuncture, but there are these little things they put in your ear. And it's like a therapy where it's like these little tiny things that kind of sit in there, like a, like little piercings that'll naturally fall out, but they help in different pressure points for like stress, sleeping, appetite. Cause I lost like 17 pounds in a month. Like it was, I know we talked about like my exercise bulimia and stuff I had in the past. I was literally doing 3 days in the gym, like going before work, during my lunch break, after work, and eating a salad. And that was like my thing. That was my way to get control before I finally, which obviously probably not eating well, probably contributed to that, you know, that mental spill because I wasn't healthy. But it was a very surreal situation. And, you know, and I had that support and I came back stronger. I became a better airman because of it. I learned from my experience. I definitely learned professionally, personally, like I grew so much on that deployment after that, because I was given that time to have my space. I got to work through my anger issues. I got to talk about the things that like, that were making, you know, my anxieties, the stuff with like my body image, with my family, to help improve my confidence and get that sense of self-worth back, that I really did. Like by the time I came out of that deployment, like I loved myself. Like I appreciated who I was. I was happy to be alive. Like I just felt good. And so I know firsthand what just going to that therapy can do for anyone, especially a service member who's got a lot of pressure on having to always be this perfect, like just have that face on and just be this model citizen 100% of the time. Like military service members aren't supposed to have the wrong opinion or get drunk and make mistakes and you know, do stuff like that. Like we get in trouble so much for stuff like that, but we're people too, you know? So it's, I think that we definitely have a lot of work to do. The Air Force has done a really good job of allowing behavioral help. Like if you're self-referred. So if I say, hey, I need to go talk to someone because I'm just dealing with some stuff and I got to work through it, that my chain of command, as long as you don't lie about it, if you tell somebody and say, hey, I'm going to go do this thing, they're supportive of that because they would rather have you do that than start showing up late repeatedly or showing up drunk or, you know, developing a drinking habit, whatever you've got to do, whatever you end up, the negative coping that happens from not coping. But the other branches, it's definitely something we've got to work on. And we're seeing ever since COVID, I think it's become more apparent. We're watching a couple of celebrities that are dealing with some stuff that are, you know, obviously could use a little bit of somebody to talk to work through things. We've, you know, and then probably people on your Facebook feed and your Instagram that you're like, man, like, I hope that person's getting the help they need, that we're seeing everywhere. This is becoming a problem now because we're so worried about what other people are going to think, that it makes us weak. But like, I mean, even like Brene Brown, let's just name drop her real quick, that like, she's someone who, you know, that vulnerability helps you understand what you're dealing with and make you stronger. Like that takes courage to do that. And that's something that I've had to learn. And she's somebody who became a key player in a lot of my development too. I've read a lot, watched a lot of her stuff. So it's cool. And you do see, and I'm sure you get some too, because you talk about like the addiction and stuff like that, that probably a lot of people don't say it out loud in front of people, but you'll get those messages and that like kind of side nudge where they're like, yeah, wow. Like, it's amazing that you can just, you know, can talk about that and that you can admit that those things, and then, you know, that you're brave and you're courageous, that it's crazy that so many people think that, but we won't put that out on the billboards to say like, you're brave by saying you're not okay. But I think we're doing a lot more social media on the plus side, though it's got some plenty of negatives, that the mental health thing is really making its way into the limelight because of we're so connected to so many resources now, which is amazing. So,
I mean, obviously losing someone that was close to you, your friend, and then having your own experiences in the services with mental health and taking care of yourself, what led you to, because I know you spent most of 2021 hiking for basically what we're talking about, to bring awareness to this need that there is. And so what inspired you to connect the two, because falling in love with the outdoors and being passionate about suicide prevention and mental health services, like, don't necessarily go hand in hand all the time.
Yeah. It was timing, right? So there's a specific time of the year. Remember the 22 push-up challenge?
I don't
remember.
There's
like, okay, so there's this challenge, and it was like, you know, you do 22 push-ups for like 22 days or something. And it's something to signify the 22 service members or veterans that commit suicide every day. So, so there was the push-up thing, right? Mm-hmm. And I guess I just sat there, and I think I just had this random, like, woke up on the wrong side of the bed. I don't know what it was, but I just got this like, oh, they think that's just going to solve the problem. Cool. They recorded themselves doing push-ups saying, look at me, look what I can do. And boom, now veteran suicide is gone. Like, I don't know. It was just this weird thing. It tipped me off, and I was like, this is stupid. How about like call a veteran or call one of your friends just in general, because mental health is not a, unfortunately, it's probably the most inclusive thing that we have, right? It is experienced across everybody can experience it, right? So just call anyone. Just because, you know, you're not in the service or you don't know any veterans, you can just be inspired by that and say, hey, let me call someone. And so I was like, if you're doing your 22 pushups and then you're calling someone, cool. But if you're just doing 22 pushups because you want to flex your muscles and get likes on social media, like, that's not what this is about. And so I guess just since becoming a service member and then having that experience, it really just that year, it kind of just pissed me off. And I was like, we need to do something. And so I decided to do 22 hikes. I was like, this was back when I was in Dover again, you know, like I was going back home and there was the Adirondack 46ers. It's the 46 high peaks in the Adirondack Mountains. It's one of the oldest hiking challenges, if not the oldest, but there's a whole history. You can Google it. I won't, you know, anyone who's interested, just look up history of Adirondack 46ers. So I don't waste anyone's time today, but and so I was like, oh, I'll hike these, you know, cause I had hiked some of them in the past with my cross country running team and just doing one here or there as a tag along. But I went out to do the 46. And one day my partner, my hiking partner ditched me. And oh, no. I was like, I'm just going to go. So I came back and then my mom's like, who'd you go with? And she just needed to look on my face. Like, I'm a bad liar. So I was like, well, my friend canceled right as I was getting to the trailhead and I wasn't driving 2.5 hours back home. So I just went. And she was all upset with me. So we've been fighting ever since about me hiking by myself. So that's fine.
Which is funny, because that's like all you do now, right?
She's gotten better. I have all of the gadgets now and the search and rescue cards and all that. So it's taken a lot of time. It's still definitely a sore subject in my family, but my mom realizes she cannot stop me and I'm an adult. So,
you're taking those safety precautions, which is so important. Like anyone that hikes solo, get the proper gear, make sure you have safety measures in place, because like even a 1 mile hike could turn into a disaster. And if no one knows where you are, then you're going to end up like, what, 147 hours.
Yeah. And then this thing tracks me too. So, you know, I have people on there that I'm like, hey, I'm doing this thing. And then they can see me in real time if I put my track me on. So, I have a couple of really good friends that are hiking partners, but when we're not together, we can keep tabs on each other. So, I mean, yeah, I'm definitely like as safe as I can possibly be about it. But for this one, like I was just trying to knock them out because I knew like my assignment in Dover was going to end and I was going to be back down in Virginia. And that's just a pain to drive up there for that, just for a weekend. Mm-hmm. So I was knocking those out and I was going up there. I was on my old Instagram page. I was wearing like veteran owned companies. Like they sent me like t-shirts. And so I would plug their company, what their like organization does. And then I would do, you know, my post about my hike, what I hiked, my experience out there, the things that I thought about while I was there. A lot of it back then was dealing with that. And around that time, 2 days after my birthday in 2009, my ex passed away. So my birthday is just like a really bad time for me. So I hike, right? So I get out there, I get outside, try to get away from anything that could trigger me, cities, try to stay away from alcohol, you know, that kind of stuff that can make me a little bit more vulnerable to my emotions. And I go out and I hike it out. And so I was doing that. And I just realized that I loved hiking. Like, it was a good challenge, because at first it was like, I'm hiking these 22 peaks for this, to raise awareness, to, you know, honor my friend. And then I was just like, man, I love this shit. Like, it was just like, that was it. Like, I just, it just clicked. Like, it just felt natural. It was, you know, I find that I sleep a lot better, because I toss and turn. I have a hard time sleeping. Definitely going out and getting physical activity, which my therapist, we decided part of my care plan is to exercise 3 times a week, at least at a moderate to heavy level. So me doing my 10 mile hikes, you know, just move around for a little bit, make sure that on my non-big days, but definitely get out for like at least a couple hours and be plugging along, because that's the level I need to hit to kind of bring me back down to base so that I can have a good night's sleep and kind of get that clear head again. So that was kind of just where the hiking kind of plugged in, and it's something that helps with my mental health. So it's easy for me to say I'm doing this for mental health awareness, but it's helping my mental health. And if you are struggling, like, get outside, go spend a couple hours in the woods. Like, you try this out, because I know this works and it can be a medicine for you too. And so that's kind of why I stuck with that as my, you know, as my plug, as hiking for mental health, because it helps me on so many different levels. That somebody, at the worst, if you pick a good hike, even if your stupid mental health just still sucks, at least you got a pretty view at the end and you can be like, yeah, this was nice. So, you know, and then you can just go to therapy after. But for some people, that literally is their church or their therapy. You know, you get some sort of spiritual benefit from that. I would say probably most people actually do benefit from that. It's definitely something that the majority of people probably, if they stuck with it, would find a very good benefit from. And so that's why I push it so much, because it is something anyone can do too, right? Like, you just need shoes and a backpack, some water and a plan. Like, you don't have to, obviously not to go do like Mount Whitney, but you know, anyone can just go walk in the woods for 20, 30 minutes, an hour or so, you know, that like, it doesn't have to be the highest peak in your state, that if you just get outside and you're just go for a little hike, that it can be beneficial. And I mean, there's science backing this now too, right? Yeah. You know, we're seeing a lot of research on it. So it doesn't feel like work. And if it does, usually there's a view after it. So you kind of get that reward. And then, you know, people who, like, I took one of my friends and she was plugging along and she's like, you do this for fun every day? And then like, she got to the top and she was like, oh my God, this is so cool. And like, completely forgot about, cause we were doing Hunter Mountain in New York. And that one is a little aggressive. The hike I took her on was shorter, a little bit more direct, probably wasn't the best idea, but I knew she, you know, she goes to the gym and stuff and I knew she could handle it. Mm-hmm. So, but again, it's not like going for a run. There's people who hate running. I'm not really a fan of running. Mm-hmm. And I like hiking. Like, I love it. So I think it's a good activity as far as something that is, anyone can do it. Don't have to have the best gear to start, that you can go, you know, totally, to local parks and state parks, you know, and you can kind of build up, which is what I did. I started trading around gear, borrowing people's stuff. And then I eventually, you know, I bought Yoshi, is what I named my Deuter pack. So I got her when I came back from boot camp. That was my starter pack to get out to start doing those high peaks. And then before that, I just had like a JanSport bag or whatever, you know, my school backpack. And then for backpacking, I borrowed one of my friends for my first trip and then came back from another mission and I had some money saved up. So I bought my backpacking through hike pack. And so you kind of work at it bits and pieces and you don't have to show up to an REI with $1,000 in hand to get out there and do it. So it's nice. And there's a lot of us, and I'm sure you probably can say the same for yourself, is you've always got a little extra too. So if you want to bring somebody along for the ride and just to see if they like it, here's a pack you can use, or, you know, here's a windbreaker or a base layer you can borrow so that you're not going out and spending that $200 on an outfit to make sure that you can withstand the rain, you know?
Yeah. And it's funny because I always feel like I'm hoarding things. I've kept most of my gear from when I started, because I've upgraded over the years, right? Like, the more time I spend doing this, the more things I learn about what I like and what I don't like, yada, yada. And I've changed things around. Like, I got a different sleeping pad, but I still have my old sleeping pad that works awesome, so that when someone wants to come backpacking with me, I'm like, here you go. Don't spend the money. Don't, you don't need to invest in anything. Just borrow this and see if you actually like backpacking at all, and then invest, right?
Yeah, that's the best way to do it. Cause that's, I mean, I did, I was just the oddball just going with the groups until I finally, you know, when I started hiking alone, I got a little bit more serious on investing. But I think that like, if you go with someone, and then there's so many programs, I feel like you highlighted something at one point about like places where you can rent gear. And yeah. I know like in the Northeast, so if you remember like the EMS, the Eastern Mountain Sports, they've started doing, you know, snowshoes, spikes, the ice axes. So if you're going up to the Northeast, like there's a place, I'm sure, I think REI does it too, right? And you know, and even some of these smaller mountaineer ones, I'm sure there's plenty out there that you can go. And if they don't, they probably know someone who does. So you don't have to, like you said, you go and spend $100 and something on a sleeping mat, and then you're like, I hate camping. Like, what do you do? Right. I don't know why anyone would feel that way, but if you do, and that's okay if you don't like camping, but you're crazy, it's fine.
So I want to ask, because you touched on obviously the importance and the impact positively getting outside has had on your mental health. What do you feel like you've learned about yourself as you've gotten outside so much?
Yeah. So, you know, we talk about the positives of the hiking and everything. And like one of the big things was, you guys are very, very busy over the summer and you were doing a lot, but I did, if you happen to catch, there was like a period of time, there was a handful of times where I would go through like a couple of days a week, I would get in a weird funk, wasn't sure if I was going to be able to get the 2021 miles in. Even like coming out on the backside, like I had a really bad, like early, like January, I had a whole thing where I don't know. Like I was going to give up hiking. I was going to like sell all my gear and be done with it. Right. Like I was so stressed out about like not being sure if I was going to hit my goal, and get those 2021 miles in. And then the like after part of, oh my God, I'm not hiking today. Like, what am I going to do? Like, I'm not out there. All these people are out there. I'm seeing all this stuff on social media. Like, I can't go do that. You know, I need to get a job. Like, I'm doing all this worrying about my finances and stuff. And so like, I'm starting to get really stressed out. And then I was like, well, it won't be a problem if I just don't like it anymore. Right. So there was a couple times that like mentally I did have some times where I, you know, it almost messed with my mental health a little bit on that side of things. And so what I learned coming out of that, probably about the past month, I've been thinking a little bit more about it, trying to reflect and kind of figure out like, where am I going this year? Like, what are my goals? And so right before I had that moment of wanting to quit hiking, I went to New Hampshire and was going to try to do a bunch of hikes and do like 22 peaks in a week up in New Hampshire in the New Hampshire 48. Yeah. So I had a big thing planned and it would have totally been doable except for there was like 50 mile an hour winds. Like it was 20 below zero. At the tops, we were looking at negative 30s, 40s. And I was like, yeah, that doesn't make sense to do that. Like this is, these were long days. It wasn't like just going on a 2-3 mile snowshoe in the base. Like you're trying to go to the highest peaks in New Hampshire, which is higher than like Mount Washington has some of the worst weather in the country.
Yeah.
So I was like, yeah, this probably doesn't make sense. So we only ended up doing 6, I think. And then I went and I just hiked some in Vermont and in New York for giving up and just coming back home. And as it was just too cold, it just wasn't enjoyable. And reflecting from that and feeling kind of defeated there, I got, you know, the feeling of everything I was worried about feeling if I didn't get my 2021 miles. And so I was like, you know, the challenges keep me motivated. So I understand goals. And I like having goals. And that's something, you know, my therapists have always brought up is that I'm a very goal-oriented person. And when I don't have goals, I lose sight of myself because I don't know what to do. So I need to make lists. I have to have a goal. There's got to be something that I'm working on. I need tasks. And so those hiking challenges were at first facilitated, but once I started learning about more of them, and then I was having this like fear of missing out and trying to like stuff all this stuff, like, oh, now I've got to get all these hikes in. Like I have to conquer it in a week. For some reason, it's a weird thing that happens in my brain is like, once I start seeing everything and then I just start adding and adding and adding, and then I feel like I've got to get it all done right now. And so that was kind of a thing that happened with me with hiking that like, if I was doing challenges, it was hard for me to back down. Like when I did the 4-state, I completed it the second time, but the first time, and it was hiking the Appalachian Trail from like Pennsylvania down to, it's the Pennsylvania Maryland border all the way through Maryland to the Virginia, West Virginia border. And the first time we got like 36 miles into it. It's like 40 some, well, so it ended up being about 45-ish because you've got to do the hikes to the starting points and from the finish points back to the cars.
Wait, are you doing this all in one day?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So this was like a thing. And so the first time we got like 36 miles and I was with one of my friends who's an ultra runner. Like he does like the 100-mile run races. Like mm-hmm. he's crazy. So I was going with him and we were doing okay until I was basically in shock because I was some level of hypothermic. I couldn't feel my legs, but I didn't feel cold. Like that's where I was at. Oh, wow. You know, I was like soaking wet and I didn't realize it. And my friend was like, so we were at like a road. He was like, we should probably hike into town and like not do this anymore. And I was like, what do you mean? We've got like 6 miles left, which was actually 10 because I did not calculate that extra bit that we were going to mm-hmm. have to do. And so I was like, we're almost to the car. And then I cried and the whole way back to town and did not talk to him at all. I was pissed. And then that's when I realized like once we ended up actually it was the middle of nowhere. There happened to be a cop there. He drove us back to our car. Hiker is under arrest, has a code. So that's a real thing. And he had the heated seats on and, you know, like he took my pack and the cop's daughter is in the Navy. And he talked about him going hiking with her. And he's like, yeah, that's a really rough area up there. It's a good thing that you came out. You know, he's trying to like talk me down. Cause I was like a little, I was probably like, you know, hysteric almost. Cause I mean, I was just in these soaking wet clothes and it was like 25 degrees out.
When you're just pushing yourself so hard setting these huge expectations of yourself with no room for flexibility at all.
I would not forgive myself for the longest time. And so when we got to our car, that's when I realized like how bad I was because the wet clothes then became warm and I was feeling my body again and then hopped back out in my warm, wet clothes into that freezing cold temperatures again. And it hit me like a ton of bricks. Like I just couldn't even hold my pack anymore. And my friend, like I started like shaking so bad. I was like convulsing almost. And my friend was like, just get in the car. And he was like scrambling to turn the car on and like put the seat back to get me in there. And he's like trying to take my clothes off me. And I don't, he's my friend, but I didn't know him that well at this point. And so I'm like, you know, what's going on? Like I knew, you know, sitting right here, I know like that's what you do. You take your clothes off, like you get that stuff off your skin. But when you're in the moment and then you have someone you're not comfortable with all of a sudden trying to take your clothes off of you. And when you're hypothermic, you don't always know that that's something that you're dealing with. Right. So I just started like panting and I was like, I just didn't want him touching me, whatever. And so he just kind of like backed up. He was like, okay. He's like, you need to get your clothes off. He's like, I'm going to go over here. I'm going to give you I'll give you your privacy. He's like, mm-hmm. I'm going to throw some clothes up to you. I'm going to load the car. And so he was like doing whatever in the back, whatever it was. And he did throw a bag up to me, but I ended up like, I just curled up in the seat, like still with my wet clothes on. Like I did not listen to him. I just curled up in a ball and I was just laying in that front seat, like just like in, just hugging my knees, like trying to like, just letting that warm air hit me. And he ended up driving us into town. He went to a gas station, got me like some like coffee or tea or whatever, some kind of hot fluid, you know, some warm snacks. And he was like, you need to eat something. Cause that was another thing that, you know, he was fighting with me the whole day. I'm like, oh, I'm not that hungry. You know? And he's like, no, you still need to eat. And so we're doing that all day. And so he's like, no, you really need to eat something. And so obviously we worked through it. I'm here today. You know, he was like, there's no way you're going to be able to drive home. Cause I was like, my car was an hour away from his by the time you drove there. And then I was like an hour and 15 minutes from my house. And he was like, you're not going to be able to drive. I can't leave you alone. So he ended up getting a hotel and then like, he got the room and then he brought me in, turned the shower on, was like, you need to get in there. He was like, I don't care if you sit in there with clothes on. He's like, but get in the shower. He's like, I'll put some dry clothes by the door for you. And so I just sat in there and I was still, I mean, I probably shivered through the whole night. Like it was crazy. That was intense, but, and I was still mad, right? Like the next day, like I was still pissed we didn't finish it. Like,
of course.
And so you know, and so that was something that, you know, I had been hyping that up for a while. And then like people would ask and I was like ashamed because like I wasn't successful, but I did have an outpouring of support. Like, well, 36 miles is a lot for a day. So like, that was really good. Of course, I'm like, yeah, well, I saw these other people on Instagram already have done it. So I know it's possible, you know, so it's definitely the comparison thing. And in that goal setting, I think that can be really challenging for people, especially when you just see, you know, everyone else is doing it, that like, if you are not successful, that you feel kind of a certain type of way and you don't realize like what people do to put the effort in the background, like what they're, yeah, what they're working on. And it's something that you kind of have to tell yourself, your chapter one might look like someone's chapter 20 or vice versa. And like, I started hiking at 25. So watching 22-year-olds conquer things that I wasn't even doing that back then. So I can't compare myself to that 22-year-old, because if they've been hiking since they were 15, they've got more experience still, even though they're younger. And so trying to take the competition with others and myself out of it is going to help me do better going forward. And that's where I jumped off of the challenges and I started, instead, I have a bucket list to do the state high points, because it's still a goal, but it's not a competition. There's not a leaderboard. I'm not racing anyone. This is my thing. My friends, we're all doing different things now. So I don't have to watch my friends in New Hampshire finishing the 48 in a single season when they're literally living up the street and I'm 20 miles or 20 hours away, you know? So it helps just break it up. We have our own things. We can root each other on. There's no animosity or jealousy, competition, because I am competitive. And so this gives me a time to slow down and also just like tour the country, see the rest of the country, because I hadn't been out west until I did the Boise Challenge as part of that 2021 miles. I've never been to Arizona. I've never been to California, Oregon, Washington. I've only been to 27 states. So, I mean, it's still a lot, but like, I haven't been to all 50. You know, this still gives me something to work towards. And if I knock out a couple every year, there's still an accomplishment there, and seeing something different, visiting other national parks, forests, state parks, you know, we need to support them too. Like, it'll help me slow down a little bit and just see how everyone else lives and kind of embrace those cultures and get to know people from different areas, that I think it'll be more fulfilling for sure too, without having all that extra pressure on like, oh, I need to do all the New Hampshire 48 in a year, or the Adirondack 46 in a single season winter, that I won't, you know, I take that pressure off and help me really embrace the benefits of hiking for mental health, rather than, because some days you'll go out there and then you just like that day, you know, I was hiking is good for mental health, but it was not good for my mental health, ending up with like hypothermia and being pissed that I didn't hike a stupid amount of miles in a day, which is crazy.
Well, and I think it's so important to recognize, like you're saying, set goals, have ambitions, have dreams. And know that when it's not fun anymore, when it's draining you instead of filling you, that's the time to like press pause and adjust and look at those goals again. Cause it's not like, oh, I shouldn't have goals, ambitions, and dreams, but it's like when I'm telling myself I need to hike these 40 some however many miles from state to state in one day, and in order to accomplish my goal or feel worthy of doing this challenge, that's not that kindness that you give yourself is crucial when it comes to mental health.
That was definitely my takeaway from doing, you know, that challenge and all that, is like 2021 miles is a lot. And anyone who's going to do it in the future, like, you just keep adding on miles and you don't get extra days. So I think I could have slowed down a little bit and enjoyed some of it a little bit more had I just embraced what was happening around me. And that's definitely like my goal for this year, is to be more present and all of that, is to make sure that I spend more time building those connections and not just flying through a town and crashing with my friends for the night so I can hit the mountains the next day. Like, let's go on a hike that's going to be fun for all of us, that you can come with me and let me stay a couple extra days and we can do your thing if hiking's not your thing. I've been spending more time just really enjoying like what's going on around me, and that it doesn't have to be this super crazy, really awesome hike with the best pictures, but just being able to just be present and appreciate what is there.
Is that kind of what adventure means to you, do you think? Like, I know in my own life, I've had all these different definitions over the years. And as I've started to find my flow and kind of get more centered and grounded in my own adventures, that definition has shifted. It sounds kind of like that's what you've experienced from this 2021 hike to the goals that you've set from this year.
Yeah. And I think it's really funny that you say that, because I was in this fellowship and we were talking about values. And I did say one of mine was adventure. And a lot of people are saying like family and faith, the normal things that people say. And then I said adventure, and, you know, I got some pushback on it. And I was like, I don't mean adventure as like going on vacation. I feel like adventure is jumping out of the norm. Adventure can be being in your own town. Like, so I just moved to this little town in Kansas. And for me, adventure could be going to the same park that I've hiked 10 times since, you know, in all my travels through here. I'll take a different way home and stop at a brewery or a bookshop or a coffee shop. Adventure is really more just experiencing different things. And also doing that intentionally to benefit from that, to like see something from a different point of view, or to just get a different perspective on something that I think like adventure for me is more of the experience that you have, not what's on the itinerary.
Yes. So well said. I love that. I get caught up in the itinerary. So this is the reminder that I need to be present in that moment and in that the journey, right?
Yeah. Even though it's not like Half Dome or the Cascades or the Redwood Forest, it's still something that I can go out and be enriched by, that I think for people who are, you know, listening or are spending a lot of time on social media, that remembering that like everything you see can be really cool as long as you open your mind to believing that that stuff is interesting, to still get out there and see those things while you start working on, you know, figuring out how to do those other things. And while we as a community, as a country, worry about fixing the accessibility and equality of access for everyone, right? So
I really love that, like the idea that adventure is just doing something different and going to a park and learning about that park. And maybe one time you go walk through a park that you've never been to or something, but just trying something different. Even if it's going to the same park a million times, doing something different each time you go there.
Oh yeah. And there's all of those options, right? Cause then you have like, you can go to the park to hike one day. You can go there and play disc golf another day. You can go and bring a friend to play tennis, you know, and that's the whole thing, is that the experience is what it's about, you know, and of course you're going to see different seasons, the different weather, sunrise, sunset, depending on the days, if you bring snacks or not. So,
yeah.
But I think that it does allow more opportunity for a bit more optimism if you are in a place where you feel like you're stuck compared to the pretty pictures on the internet.
Well, speaking of pretty pictures on the internet, if people want to find you and follow your adventures and connect with you more about mental health for veterans, where can they do that?
So right now I primarily just have my Instagram page, which is legendary_Lindsay. I am working on, if I go ahead and spoil this, Soldier Socks, who's a company that I always talk about. They asked me if I would manage their social media page on Facebook when they get that stood up. So I'll be behind the scenes on that, doing different stuff about hiking and stuff. And I'm working on a blog, but it's a mess right now. And I'm not sure if I'm going to keep it. Cause it just gets so frustrating, but all things that I'll put them in like my link tree on Instagram if I'm doing any projects. So
awesome. Hey, well, thank you so much for joining me and talking about both your experiences personally and what you've seen in your community with veterans. I think it's so important to keep having these conversations about mental health and kind of breaking down those barriers and those stigmas and those stereotypes. So I really appreciate your vulnerability today.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
I hope today's episode helped you find the inspiration and courage to get outside and define your own adventure. If you like the podcast, please don't forget to subscribe, follow, and leave a review on whatever platform you're listening on. I'll be back next week with more stories from the trail. Until then, adventure on!